listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
Most of us have a hole in us. The hole is all about love. We desire it, we crave it, we seek it. Yet most of us don't understand really how to be with love. Until we know how, we can't be at peace within ourselves or in our world. And so to attain this, we need to develop the love mindset that my guest today, Veronica Tugaleva, is talking with me about today. Welcome to Full Power Living, where we focus on helping you and the world understand the power and importance of human emotions, discovering how they operate in all areas of our lives. We broadcast over blogtalkradio.com/FPL for Full Power Living and emotionalpro.com, and we distribute through iTunes. You're also invited to call and tell us your comment or ask a question. Our toll-free number is 888-498-0570. 888-498-0570. So Veronica Tugaleva is an author, speaker, people lover, reformed cynic, and a different kind of spiritual teacher. She teaches people to heal and love themselves. She seeks to be the light in others' lives that she wished she had had in her own times of darkness. For 10 years, Veronica struggled with addiction, eating disorders, and self-loathing, as she says, destroying herself with ferocity. Several years ago, she hit rock bottom. She found she could go no lower, so she had to choose, change or die. She chose to change. From there, she's been on an incredible journey of healing and happiness. She's the author of The Love Mindset, an unconventional guide to healing and happiness. And you can find out more about Veronica at veronica.org, and you spell Veronica, V-I-R-O-N-I-K-A.org. So, Veronica Tugaleva, welcome to Full Power Living.
Thank you for having me. Thanks.
My pleasure. So, your idea that our human suffering results from a deprivation of love, that we all need love, we seek it, we suffer when we don't have it, and yet we don't know how to get it. Talk to me, set us up for our discussion by telling us what the problem is.
Well, in short, the problem is actually quite simple to explain. The problem is that we keep looking for it on the outside. And when we start looking for it on the inside, which is what some people do, they turn to self-love, right? Then we start to set these conditions on it, and we still keep looking for it on the outside, right? We say, oh, if I only look like this, or if I had this, then I would love myself. And we just don't realize where it comes from, and we don't realize how important it is, as you said. So those are really the two things that are in our way. We don't know where it's coming from, and we don't know that we're dying without it. And so when we get these symptoms, I call them symptoms of love deprivation, we think it's something else. We think it's unrelated, when really it's related to our inability to get love for ourselves.
Well, you know, you remind me that I think I was probably in my early 30s, so it's about 40 years ago, that I used to find myself crying myself to sleep because I didn't have any friends. And I went to an astrologer that somebody recommended, and I didn't totally trust him, so I said, tell me about me and work, and tell me about me. And finally I got to, tell me about me and friends. And he looked at my astrological chart, and he looked up and he said, you might as well forget it. You're not going to have any friends in this lifetime. And that was pretty stunning, and he proceeded to tell me that I didn't come here to have friends. I came to do work. And so that just wasn't going to happen for me. He said, besides that, I looked at things with such a big canopy that it scared people, that friends didn't like to look at the entire universe and talk about the entire universe all the time. And so when I left his place, I started thinking about what he'd said, and I pulled over to the side of the road and started crying. I was mad that other people seemed to be able to have friends and I couldn't. But I made a decision. I said, you know, I can't argue with this man because I don't have friends. So that means that I only have one friend, and that's me. And I better be a damn good friend to myself. And it transformed my life to do that.
Mm. Yeah. Did you end up running into some people that you mesh with when you gave up on trying to find them too?
Not right away, but eventually, yeah. Not only did I find people that I meshed with, but I found people that had a hunger to love me. You know, it's like,
there you
like
go.
I dated a man who, he and his wife had been dear friends. She was my mentor. She had died of cancer, and I ran into him, and he said, here, I have these things that were my wife's. You knew her. You loved her. She would love you to have these things. Here, come take a trip with me. All this stuff, you know, and I remember at one time telling him, too much, too much. I can't take all that love.
Oh, wow. Yeah, you know, it's funny because I tell people that that's going to happen, that once you kind of release looking for it anywhere except for inside of yourself, then you get it from other people. Then they start wanting to offer it to you because you just naturally get into these cycles, and then you invite people to be part. Those cycles have to be established, first of all, within yourself. And I think it's hard for people to believe. I mean, you've seen it, but I think it's hard for people to believe that it really works like that, that once you release this thing that you think that you want, then you get something much better.
Well,
that serves
in,
you better.
In my work as a therapist, I have one of my biggest issues is to persuade people that life happens from the inside out. So it seems like it's, you know, in general, we don't believe that life happens from the inside out.
No, we don't. And, you know, this is really a foundation of what I call the love mindset. It's just getting in touch with whatever level you think everything is interconnected at, whatever level you think you're already the same as everybody. And it's so simple. And you just get in touch with that level all the time. You get in touch with that level with yourself, with other people, with nature. You realize that you're already connected. And by getting in touch with that on a regular basis, you completely lose the need for approval. You completely lose the need to have people walk around and praise you. You lose the need to have other people love you. You're just getting it because you are it. And it's this incredible experience. And some people, you know, when if I'm working with somebody, say, one-on-one, and they surrender to me and they say, okay, help me, we can get that process going, right? But if somebody's not open to it, they ask me, well, how does that work? And what does this do? And what is this called? And where does this go? And then they want to make it all complicated. And so I think there's this idea of, you know, moving from the inside out, and that's important. But there's also this idea of simplicity. Like, it's simple. It's very simple. I mean, it might not be easy, but everybody's always looking for something incredibly complicated to save them. So they miss the simple thing that you're just supposed to do every day. Like that. That's the answer. And that, I always
totally,
find. Yeah.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. Sometimes I, as a therapist, I read things that other therapists write, and they go, oh, well, you to do this, you need to do blah, 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 and they have 15 steps, and I go, oh, no, that's way too complicated, because truth is simple. And now here's a question that comes up when you say that, though. There's a lot of emphasis these days in therapy circles, for sure, on the brain and the brain research. Mm-hmm. And yet you're talking about the mindset. And is there a difference between what our brain does or is and what a mindset is that you're talking about?
Yes, there really is. That's a great question. I don't think anybody's ever asked me that before, but I have quite a few opinions on that. So a brain, I think, can be wired in any way. I mean, who knows if it's nature or nurture or a combination of both that does specific things. I mean, something like autism, we'll never know, right? Like, is that really genetic, or is there something happening to these kids at age 2 that's sending them over the edge. Like, we don't know. And when I was in my toughest times, I heard voices. I mean, is that genetic? Did that come from my genetics? Did that just arise out of my environment? Is that something about my neurological wiring? Is it because I didn't have any friends and I spoke to myself while I didn't have any friends, and then it kind of just translated into voices? Have there been patterns of abuse in my family because we're wired neurologically a certain way, or have our behaviors just allowed our brains to be wired that way? And these are interesting discussions, but at the end of the day, let's just say that maybe you can't change the infrastructure of your brain. Maybe you can't change the fact that you hear voices or hallucinate or get anxious thoughts or get fearful thoughts, get depressed thoughts. And what the love mindset is all about, and what I help people with, is understanding that a healthy mind is simply a state where you observe and question your thoughts, and you know the kinds of nourishing thoughts that you need to give yourself on a daily basis. So it's sort of this nourishing pattern that you would need to engage in with a plant. If you want the plant to grow, you would give the plant water and sunshine. You would not pour vodka on it, right? And This is what I call the healthy mind, that you would start picking out, what is it that's toxic inside of me? What are these thoughts? And that's really what the mind is to me. They're thoughts. And sometimes a thought, it says something like, I'm ugly or I'm stupid, and that's toxic, and that weighs us down, gives us horrible emotions, gives us a horrible sense of self. But sometimes a thought, which I consider to be like a brain wave, a perception wave, then sometimes the thought says there's smoke in this room, and that's true. Right? So if there's smoke in the room, we're going to need to go. And the whole point of the love mindset is to be in touch with something other than your thoughts, so that you can look at your thoughts and say, okay, is this true? Is this true? Is this really true? Do I want to believe that? Is that good for me? Is this bad for me? What is going on here? And when we look at things that way, like which thoughts are nourishing for us, which thoughts are not, we find that every single person in this world wants to feel interconnected with other people. And in Western culture, we've somehow decided that the way to do that is to get into romantic relationships and hyper-focus on the first 2 years when the chemicals are high and forget about everything else, right? And All I'm saying is that this thought pattern, which is a fundamental to a healthy mind, to a healthy set of thought processes, this thought process will feed our souls, it'll feed our hearts, it makes us happy, and then it makes us happy for a reason. That thinking, I am powerful or I am beautiful, that makes us happy for a reason. And it's not an affirmation, it's a nourishing thought pattern. It is something that is true. It's like we're intaking truth. And so when we build the healthy mind, we can still be hearing voices. We can still be having hallucinations. We can still be having all of these symptoms of mental distress, which comes from neurological wiring in the brain. But when we use our healthy mind for long enough, then I think we start restructuring the patterns in the brain, and we start using the brain's own plasticity and establishing new routines and new ways of looking at the world. And I think some people are obviously in more dire straits, and maybe they do need medication, right? They need medication to assist with this. But whether or not somebody's on medication, I think a vital part of mental health is establishing this healthy mindset, this healthy bunch of thoughts, and this healthy understanding of your thoughts. What do your thoughts mean? You don't have to believe them. You don't have to stick with them. They're just thoughts. And that once we all kind of take that responsibility for caring for our minds the way that we know we have to care for our bodies, whether or not we do it, right? Like, we know that you're supposed to feed your body healthy nutrients, give it exercise, right? Keep smoke out of your lungs. That same way, we can look at our minds. We can know, okay, this is bad for me. This is good for me. These are the thoughts I need to have. These are the thoughts I don't. And I honestly believe that once we start doing that, then mental health issues will stop running rampantly in families, because once you just drug an issue and you don't actually try to solve it, you don't do anything to try to solve it, all you're doing is drugging the symptoms, there's no hope for you helping your children deal with that same issue. And while I do think that there are some mental health issues that need to be resolved on like a medical, on like a brain kind of level, like just looking at pure neurology, maybe looking at some medications, I think once we teach people how to take care of their minds in a way that doesn't require that, will actually have, you know, the time and the resources to deal with the things that are more to do with the brain once we've got our minds right, I mean, individually and socially. And that's going to be, I hope I see that.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. Now, I'm thinking as you're talking how that you had this experience that when you are really down on yourself, when the thoughts that you have are in a negative spiral or a negative rut, it's in my experience anyhow, very, very difficult to get the person to move to a more positive thought. And in fact, it's very difficult to even reach that person. Having been there where you were really down on yourself and your thoughts were largely negative and not loving, what do you, if you have somebody in your life who has an addiction or an eating disorder or some kind of a problem, what's your recommendation for how to let them know that there's another way?
You know what? The best way is, first of all, to cease all advice. Because, I mean, when you look at somebody that's in that kind of state, they're already guarded, especially if they're around you. If they're around another person, they're guarded. And really, mental distress is a very isolating thing because you're isolated inside of your mind. And people who are in that kind of distress are, they don't know they are, but they're incredibly selfish. They're just thinking about their own survival mechanisms. They're not connecting with people. They don't really see the people that are there. And most of them have a certain degree of social anxiety because they're so stuck in their heads. They don't understand that they're connected to other people whatsoever, right? So when you get this person out in front of you, even if they're a family member, they're in their head. They're right in their head. They're not there with you. So anything that you say to them, especially giving advice, trying to talk about their problem, trying to judge them, it just adds to that belief system that they're separate from you. It just adds to that belief system that they're a million miles away, and it doesn't help. So the two things that will help somebody in that state, number one is to completely disregard all of those things and try to connect on the level that you're already connected, right? Because we're all connected on kind of a human level. You know, try to talk about the weather, right? Like, you don't have to talk to an anorexic person about her anorexia every single time you see them, right?
Right.
Or talk to an addict about their addiction. I mean, I have a friend who's an author. He got locked up in the high security mental health ward, and everybody that visited him would talk to him about his mania, and nobody wanted to have a real conversation. And that's what he needed when he was manic. He just needed to have a normal conversation. So that's one thing. You want to connect to the person on a human level. Talk about things, like talk about your memories together. Talk about the weather. Talk about the news. Talk about something like that. Talk about something positive. Talk about what rain smells like. You know, just not always persevering on that problem. And the second thing is tell stories. So if you know that this person is overbelieving their thoughts, and start kind of looking at it that way, because I almost killed myself, and that was because I had a thought that said, I must kill myself in order to make this pain stop, and I believed it to the end, right? And I think it's tragic, but most of our mental health system, if somebody goes and gets help, and they say, I'm suicidal, nobody mentions that to them. Nobody mentions, hey, did you know you're thinking I need to die? That's just a thought. You don't have to believe that. And that is one of the most effective and one of the most amazing and rarely used ways to prevent people from acting on those thoughts. You just say, you know, they're thoughts. You can just let them be in your head. That's how you quit smoking. That's how you quit overeating. You know, you just let them be in your head. And you can't really tell a person that. So once again, if you say that to the person in front of you, you're going to feel like you're judging them, separating from them. But tell a story, and like a genuine story, because now you're going to be looking for it in your own life. So something like, hey, you know what happened to me the other day? I was going to work. I was waiting for the bus to come, and suddenly my mind just started going wild. It said, you left the stove on. You've left the stove on. You've left the stove on. You got to go back. So, you know, I go back, and I go into my house and the stove is off. I realize I never even turned the stove on that day. You know, aren't our thoughts silly? Aren't they silly? Like, we don't have to believe them all the time. So anyway, let's talk about something else, right? So once we can establish those kinds of ways of relating, the person might not even bat an eyelash in front of you. But once they're away from you and more comfortable, less socially anxious, that might start weaving into their belief systems. And the more you can kind of create those relationships based on compassion, on empathy, not just seeing them through this mask of, oh, you've got mental problems. That's what we're going to talk about. I'm going to connect with you as a human being, and then I might just tell you stories, just stories. That's it. Stories about me. I don't want to tell you what to do. Then it really brings this human element in, and then you might see them start to trust you, and then you might see them take a chance, and then you might see them get some hope, right? And that's really how I believe we can access that. Yeah.
That's some of the best advice I ever heard. Thank you on that question. That's really good. So we're up to our first break. I'm talking today with Veronica Tugaleva. I said I was going to be able to say it right, and I stumbled over it every time. Tugaleva, author of the best-selling book, The Love Mindset, An Unconventional Guide to Healing and Happiness. And when we come back, we're going to be talking about whether love is an emotion or is it something else? We talk more about love and its availability next here on Full Power Living.
Do you know that emotionally, children form the foundation for their life during their first 7 years? Most adults just repeat that early emotional learning, good or bad, over and over for the rest of their lives. If you want to give your child an opportunity to live an emotionally masterful life, then join me, Eileen Dillon, also known as the Emotional Pro, for a free one-hour teleseminar on what it takes for your child to become an emotional master. You'll discover important things like what emotions are designed to do for us, 4 things it's vital for parents to tell their children about emotions, and the single most important thing to do when someone is feeling emotion. Register now at RaiseIncredibleKids.com. The time has come for us to allow emotions their rightful place in our lives as the tools and helpers they're created to be. Find out what you need to know in order to give this vital information to your children so they can live emotionally masterful lives. Go now to RaiseIncredibleKids.com for your free Emotional Mastery Teleseminar.
Welcome back to Full Power Living. I have a few announcements. Next week, I leave for Ireland to participate in LinkedIn's Parenting 2.0 2014 conference on life skills for children, where I'll be talking about emotions as life skills that we need to help children learn about. And my 8-year-old granddaughter, Amelia, is also giving a presentation in this conference. Hers is on a financial literacy project that she participated in when she was in the 3rd grade. And I'll put the URL for the conference on both of our chats, so check it out. You'll see my lovely little granddaughter, her picture in the program. And can you imagine what her curriculum vitae will be like when she's older, to say that she did a presentation at an international parenting conference at the age of 8. I'm so impressed that she has this opportunity. Well, in my absence, I've recorded 2 wonderful shows for you. Next week, I talk about the Death Monologues with Giselle Suarez, who works as an actress and playwright and is also a death doula. It's a topic that we don't often talk about, and she has some really interesting insights. And it only happens that we scheduled that show on 9/11, but there it is. On September 18th, Diane Morris-Jones discusses her technique for revolutionary stress management, which is a simple method she calls Stop, Breathe, Believe. There's certainly plenty of stress available to us these days, don't you think? So this very simple and very effective way to deal with it, I've shared this with other people. It's really been helpful. So I'll be back live on September 25th with Omina, and we'll be talking about your soul and its history. So great topics, amazing information and inspiration for you. Please listen to these wonderful shows. And also, if you want more information or to know about the shows ahead of time, sign up at emotionalpro.com to be on our mailing list, and we'll send you the show announcements and also let you know what I'm doing as I roam the world. My guest today is Veronica Tugaleva, who's author of The Love Mindset. And in recent years, the guests on my program have illustrated how dealing with a problem they encounter in their own life, once they've handled it, leads them to their life work. And Veronica, this is true of you. And in your book, you say that what you did one day really is essentially stop running from your emotions and just allow them to be. And I want to talk with you about that later, but I'd like now for you to tell us, what are you doing with your life today? Where has dealing with the issues in your life brought you?
On a personal level, it's brought me to this flow. You know, it's hard to explain in any way but to say a flow. You know, everything used to be kind of disjointed from one another, and everything was a struggle. And once I dealt with the actual issue, I mean, I thought the issue was that I needed to lose weight, or I needed to dye my hair, or I had a bad past, or I had this trauma. And really, once I dealt with the real issue, which was my relationship with myself, especially my relationship with my mind, then just effortlessly, I got the urge to exercise, not for results of any sort, but just exercise, just to move my body. And then I get this urge to take care of what I eat. And I mean, I have been vegetarian for years, but now it wasn't about what it used to be about. It wasn't about, you know, activism and conformity and all of that. It was just about, this is what I want to put into my body. Even after I quit drugs, like the smoking stuck around, but suddenly it was like, no, I don't think I'll be putting that into my body anymore. And all of these relationships in my life fell apart, and all these new ones came together. And my relationship with my family, which I never thought would get better, just became this beautiful, it's unfolding, and it's still unfolding now. And the reason I thought that it would never get better was because I thought that the past would just always haunt us. But once I learned to accept myself just as I am, I mean, the way that I roll out of bed in the morning is the way I go on stage, is the way I go on camera. I mean, I don't put on makeup. I don't put on emotional makeup. This is just me. You know, I didn't prepare for this. I had some coffee, but except for that, there's no need for me to become anybody else ever, anytime. I'm the same as I am in one environment as I am in another. I just am me. And when I allowed myself to be that way, I just let my family be that way. You know, I would visit them, and I stopped expecting them to change. And that was wonderful. It gets rid of so much baggage to try to, because I would show up and expect them to be different people every single time and be so angry with them every time they were the same. And now it's, you know, there's this sort of gentle laugh behind the scenes, like, oh, you're going to be the same. And once I reached that point, and it wasn't really a point, you know, it's still a journey, and some days it's still harder than others. But when I started understanding the real implications on a human lifespan of this, I spent a couple of weeks, and I don't often talk about this, actually, but I think you'll be the first. But I spent a few weeks being in this shock and awe over how short a human life is. I began to see my life as, you know, this much has gone by, and however much is going to go by is going to go by, and I could get hit by a truck tomorrow, and I only get one. And I spent just a few weeks just being in total awe of that every day, day in and day out. And I began to feel sort of strange that I was feeling this all the time. But now I get in touch with that feeling on a regular basis. You know, I feel that every day, like my life could be over any moment. And so setting distant goals in the future, like, oh, I'm going to lose 10 pounds. There's no point in doing that, right? There's only today. There's really only today and every single moment of today within which I can make the most out of that. And it was really good to experience it for myself for a little while. But, you know, it just became, I started feeling like I had to do something about it You know, I had to start teaching people about it. And publishing the book was really part of an effort to do that. But I think going beyond publishing the book was really what was hard for me. It was hard for me to start, you know, going out there and going on radio shows, start writing articles, start speaking, start coaching. Right? I have this audio video course now that takes the book and makes it into more of like an interactive program that people can learn from. And every single step of the way, I found that the doors are all open. You know, everything that I am teaching, people are so hungry to hear. And so I've become this sort of reluctant leader in this sphere. And I do love everything that I do, but I didn't really dream about teaching this very specific thing when I was younger. I mean, when I was younger, I wanted to do something amazing in the world, but I didn't really mean to be teaching specifically this. Like, I think this chose me more than I chose it, right?
This is amazing in the world, however. You did create what you thought in your, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, on some level, I really did, right? Like, I had to, I mean, that's
so amazing. You couldn't even imagine it.
Yeah, and I had to go through it, you know? That's the way I see the suffering. Like, I had to go through that in order to do what it is that I'm doing now. And it's just incredible. It's incredible to do this. It's incredible to just know about something so deeply, not from a book, not from an institution, not because somebody indoctrinated me with it, because I've had to use it on myself, right? And I'm my first student. I'm my first teacher. And all I do is give people suggestions that have worked for me. And it's amazing to see that working out for the rest of the human race. I mean, who would have thunk it, right?
Right. So let's talk a little bit more about emotions. This whole show originated 11 years ago on the idea that I've been working with emotions. Mostly, like you, I needed to deal with anger because, given the circumstances of my early life, I was full of anger. And I went even to the University of California library, the School of Social Work library at Berkeley, and looked for how do I deal with anger. And I literally found out that at the time, that was maybe in the 80s, people didn't write about anger separately from anything else. They only wrote about it or talked about it in terms of how anger might be involved with mental health, or, you know, what you have, you know, that you have to set anger aside or you have to medicate past it and so forth. So I ended up developing my own understanding, like you're talking about, of how to work with anger. And as I did, I began to see that emotions have actually been given to us as a gift, as tools, that each emotion is a signal and has its own unique signal, like love signals you to come closer. Loneliness signals that you have more energy going out than you have coming in. Each one has a different signal. And they're standing at the ready 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And yet, if you cover them over or push them away, they are not available to help you navigate your life, which is what they're meant to do. And so that's the understanding, the basic understanding I've developed of emotions. And I know you've worked with emotions. Tell me how you see them.
You know, I do see that framework, and that is exactly what I see. And the only thing I would add that I teach is this part about what exactly the emotions are signals of. And so before, I kind of mentioned this briefly, but I say that a thought is a brainwave, right? And so I tend to divide thoughts into interpretive thoughts and sensory thoughts. And I think once we start, by the way, when we start cutting things with this metaphysical knife and I tell you there's this and there's this, it's really easy to believe that this is what they're called. And if you hear somebody else calling them something else, they're not talking about what I'm talking about.
Right.
I do think it's really important to keep in mind that the only reason I'm labeling these things is just to achieve an understanding of something that you inherently know, that all the listeners inherently know. So please feel free to chuck my definitions and my labels out the window. I'm really not a fan of language in terms of its way of dividing us. So only try to apply this to your own experience, but don't let this become dogma. That always that always worries me. But really, it's I mean, if you think about the kinds of brainwaves that we have on a regular basis, there's the kind of the sensory thoughts, you know, the things that we could say are coming from the reality around us, like the smell of the car fumes, the scent of pancakes, or the sight of the sunset, you know, and one could argue philosophically that, you know, these things are, we're perceiving them quite differently than how they really are. But there's this range of thought where we can perceive them to the best of our ability, right? And that's really what's going on. But then we've got this other part of our minds that much of Eastern tradition would actually say is bad and like evil and not good. And I don't think that. I think these parts of our minds that are incredibly intelligent are amazing. You know, they can take us to the moon. They can build rockets. They can build these computers and these machines. I mean, you and I would not be speaking if we didn't have these incredibly intelligent parts of our minds. But those parts of our minds, because they're capable of separating from everything, they're capable of predicting the future and pacing themselves, you know, like 100 years in the future from today and making these complex patterns, those thoughts are actually capable of carrying us away from anything related to anything that is going on, right? Those are the same thoughts that can take us to the moon, are the same thoughts that can make us stand in front of a person who's thinking about, who's wondering when lunch is. And we can be telling ourselves, like, oh, my God, he thinks I'm stupid. Oh, my God, he's looking up at the blemish on my face, and he hates me, and he doesn't want to be with me, and he's thinking about what a horrible, horrid, fat person I am. And that's the same over-intelligent mind that we've got that can help us achieve great things working directly against us. And so you're going to get a bad emotion either way when you intake a toxic thought pattern. But the toxic thought pattern might be, as I said before, there's smoke in this room. But that signal is saying, okay, move out of the room because the thoughts that you're intaking are true, therefore move out of the room. But what about when you're standing in front of a person and you're thinking, oh my God, he thinks this, he thinks this, and you're getting the bad feeling, thoughts were true, then you absolutely should walk away, right? But if those thoughts are not true, then what those emotions are signals of is the quality of your thought. And that's really the thing that I teach, and it's the ultimate balance. When you get the emotion of anger, I would say sit in it and ask yourself, okay, is this emotion giving me feedback on the quality of my thought or the quality of my environment? Is what I'm thinking true? And if so, what should I do coming out of that? And adding that really important step, right? So the emotion is a signal, but of what? Is it a signal for how I should choose to perceive or for how I should choose to act? Can allow us to do the East and the West at the same time. So we can work on our minds and we can work on changing outside of ourselves all the time, right? We can create different environments, build nourishing relationships, choose work that serves us, you know, go into environments that are really good for us, but then we can also be working on our minds in the background. And that's really what I'm all about. I'm all about synthesizing those two, right, and not always taking it as a signal of the outside, not always taking it as a signal of the inside, which is really what you'll see the world polarized into when we talk about these things, but really doing both when the time is right. And that, that's the gentle balance. That's, you know,
that's
I
really
screw that
great.
Up all the time. So,
we've got a couple of, well, we've got comments on the chat from the same individual. I call it gawking when we really get a thought like life is short. Cosmologist Brian Swim has said that gawking is the purpose of the human in the universe. And my point is that Veronica is right on. And the universe encourages her to keep talking about her experience of how life shifts when she can move thoughts out of her head and through the whole of life. That's the comment we got.
Do you know what's wild? And I hope this person is still listening. I have just begun reading The Universe is a Green Dragon by Brian Swim. That is the book I've just begun to read. I mean, that's just wild. So obviously I have to read it.
Apparently you're on the right track. As I said, you're right on.
Oh, I love that. Don't you love that when everything just zips together? And oh, I love that. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I did. I took my two or three weeks ago, I took my 17-year-old granddaughter, who was visiting for the first time on her own ever, to Stanford. And there are three kids in her family that are going to school, college at the same time, going to. And she fell in love with Stanford. And we not only got to talk to a counselor there that talked about financial aid, but 5 days later, I was given a list of people to call for some other work I was doing. I called this woman in Seattle, and she and I ended up talking, and her son is a senior at Stanford who got a full-ride scholarship. She offered to help my granddaughter with her application if she wanted to.
Amazing.
Yes, I love those kinds of things.
I know. And it's just so real. It's so real and human, and that's really it. I think that's what it comes down to.
we're up to our second break. I am talking today with Veronica Tugaleva, who's author of the best-selling book, The Love Mindset, An Unconventional Guide to Healing and Happiness. And don't forget to check out her website, which is Veronica, VIRONIKA.org. We'll be right back. You're listening to Full Power Living.
How difficult is it for you to ask directly for what you really want? To take responsibility graciously and willingly for your mistakes? Or to relate with others because it's fun instead of because you need something from them? Most people believe manipulation and codependence are normal behaviors for adults. They may be common, but they're not normal. Manipulative behaviors really are designed to be part of childhood, to be put away as things of the past when we become adults. So if you're ready to let manipulation and codependence be part of your past, then get the mini course I've created for you, Ending Codependence, The Bottom Line. I'm Eileen Dillon, the Emotional Pro, offering you a formula that you can follow for creating healthy, manipulation-free, and lasting intimate relationships. I also give you the tools and principles that you can use to develop lasting immunity to codependence. Get Ending Codependence today at www.emotionalpro.com. That's emotionalpro.com.
Welcome back to Full Power Living. We're talking about the love mindset with author and spiritual teacher Veronica Tugaleva. Veronica, on the chat, the same individual said, be sure to do canticle. We're talking Brian Swim here. Be sure to do Canticle to the Cosmos and the Powers of the Universe. Both are DVD courses. Homework. That's your homework assignment, I guess.
Thank you. I will do that.
Okay. So here is a question. As I was reading and digesting what you've written in The Love Mindset, I remembered back many years ago when I realized that I believed that I was unlovable. And as I decided to change it, it meant that even though I had not experienced the kind of love I was looking for, I was the one who was going to have to give it to myself. And that's quite a challenge. I didn't feel like I knew how to do it. What if you were to have given me pointers back then, what would you say? How would I bring love into myself when I didn't have an experience of what love really was?
Sure. You know, I think the first thing that we really have to deal with when it comes to that is not entirely the notion of love, but more the notion of self. Because I think once you find out who you really are and you develop a kind of self-awareness where you can be in touch with your true self, then love isn't really a question. I mean, you just naturally feel that feeling. And so at the heart of this whole loving yourself journey is really finding out, okay, so who am I? And it's a more complicated question than I think in Western society we're led to believe, because who we're told we are is something different from everybody else. You know, if you were to look at trees, then you could say a maple tree is very different from an oak tree, is very different from a human being, is very different from a snail. And at the end of it all, there's still this energy that is keeping us all alive. And it doesn't matter if you're a scientist or if you're a crystal ball reader. I mean, everybody believes that at some level, there's this oneness that's keeping everything alive. And I think we destroy this oneness by speaking about it, because even if we get into Buddhism and they start talking about reincarnation, well, then the spirit that leaves something that has died, being able to go back fully into something else, that's not oneness, right? Because that means that once that thing has died, that spirit is separate from the rest of whatever it is that spirit is. It's too complicated. It's already too complicated. It's done, right? So what I'm really talking about is that at this base level, there's just this energy. And that is life energy. And that's the same within me, within you. And the way that you can kind of start thinking about it is imagine that you have some dirt in your right hand. And imagine that you've got some sort of tool, like a spoon of some sort. I'm not really sure what you would do this with, but like a shovel, like a little shovel in your other hand. And you've got this seed in front of you. And you haven't buried the seed, right? You haven't put the dirt over it. You haven't buried it. You haven't done anything. You're just standing there. You're staring at the situation. And you know that that specific spot, if you plant that seed there right now, which you haven't done yet, then with the amount of rainfall that comes down and the amount of sunshine that it gets, it will grow into a tree, undoubtedly. Just the rules for life are set up there. So the question is, where does life start? I mean, does it start when you put the seed under the ground? Does it start when the seed sprouts underneath the ground? Because at that point, all of the original seed is broken and disintegrated, and there's something completely different. It has none of the appearance that it used to have before. Or does life start when it comes above the ground, when you as a human being can perceive it? Or did life start when you decided to plant that seed in the ground with the thought of, I'm going to plant it? If you start looking at it like this, you realize you can't actually compartmentalize life like that. Life is something that's already going on, and we can only kind of make use of it. We can plant our seeds where the sun is already shining. We can water where there are already seeds. Except for that, we're already there. There's already this pattern going on. And that, at the core, is what every single human being is. Every single human being, if you were buried under the ground with no coffin, would push up daisies, right? Because that's what you are. You're just this energy, and that's it. I mean, it doesn't get any more complicated than that. So when you realize that that's what you are, then the question of, do I love myself? Do I approve of myself? Am I good enough? That kind of goes away, because you're already everything that you've ever wanted to be. You're just this life potential that is making itself known through this physical form. You're the exact same thing as a tree. You're the same thing as a snail. You just happen to have this really awesome vehicle that you can drive this potential with, that can become aware of itself. And that's really great. And we've been sort of misusing that potential of self-awareness for self-destruction, for self-judgment. But we've just forgotten who we really are. And all we need to do is take this incredible capacity for self-awareness, for being able to look at ourselves and say, is this good, is this bad? Should I have done this, should I not have done this? And to see kind of beyond that and develop what I call flower intelligence, which is just the ability to exist without struggling, which everything else on this entire planet can do because it's nature. And self-love is just this basic understanding, like, whoa, I am nature. That's what I am. I am nature, right? I wouldn't go into the forest and start painting the cracks in on the trees because they're ugly. I wouldn't go into nature and start shrieking in horror at the dead branches or the dead flowers saying, no, why did this happen? You know, I would just say, death is normal. Flaws are normal. There's not even such a thing as a flaw. You know, everything's just interacting with each other, growing as it grows. Things die so other things can live, and it's always been this way, and everything's perfect already, and that's just how it is. And that's really who we are. That's who we are. That, at the core, that's who we are. And on the self-love journey, the way that we kind of get away from that is because we think, oh, I am an accountant, or I am a woman, or I am a mother, I'm a writer, right? Or I am this weight or this. And we start measuring ourselves in just these things that are impermanent. I mean, they're impermanent. Even the fact that you're a woman, like, that's impermanent. So after you die, you're just going to be this energy. You're the same thing now as you're going to be when you die. Just this form will be completely different. And so when we get in touch with that part of ourselves, and some people might call that spirituality, some people might call that energy. You know, if you look at it from a scientific level, it's just the basic laws of thermodynamics, right? Everybody believes this on their own level, uses their own words. When we allow that to be who we are and detach from identifying with everything else, everything else is just a game, right? So if I'm overweight or underweight, that's a game, right? I don't need to worry about my weight. I don't need to worry about whether or not people approve of me, because I'm already this totally worthy thing. I'm this beautiful, powerful energy that's the same as the energy of the sunset. Like, I am the sunset. So why do I need to fix myself? And simply by getting in touch with that part of ourselves, it just allows us to grow. It allows us to be, and then we can choose to be of a healthy weight, not by purposefully aiming towards the healthy weight, but by saying, okay, so if I'm already everything I've ever wanted to be, and if everything's already okay, then maybe I should just do what I want, right? That's what a flower does. It just does what it wants. Like, it goes towards the sun. It goes towards the water. And when you ask yourself truly, genuinely, what do you want, then you start getting into these really nourishing habits with yourself, because that's what you want, right? You're built to enjoy being healthy, but most people just never take a moment to be in touch with what it is that they truly want, because this idea of, do I deserve it? Do I not deserve it? Am I good enough? Do I deserve to exist, right? Like, that's the question inside of most people's minds that they don't realize they're asking. They're like, do I have the right to exist? And so that's really what self-love is about. Self-love is an unconditional, forever, yes, you do, right? Now get on with it, right? And that stands, I mean, that stands in the way. And I think once you see it, this really small, tiny wall in between you and everything, and this wall is so rarely talked about, right? It's so rarely talked about, and we're searching for all these really complicated things. But really, it just comes down to sitting down with yourself and saying, this is it. That's it. Even if nothing changes, like, this is it. I'm already it. I'm already doing what I'm supposed to be doing. I exist. And that's enough.
Right? Nice. So I wanted to ask you a quick question. We're fast running out of time here. You have a lovely quote from Jason Everett in The Love Mindset, which is, don't worry about finding your soulmate. Find yourself. Find yourself. And that's you talking about drawing love through us and not trying to connect with it from the outside. Can you give us a brief statement about that?
Sure. Well, you know, now that I'm saying, you know, we're all kind of the same. We're at some level, we're all the same. So when we allow ourselves to be in touch with that, with ourselves and with others, then we can also allow ourselves to be different at the levels that we're different, right? And when we connect to people, everybody, so like now that I've got this mindset, like everybody, I love everybody, all the human beings in this world, like I am connected with them. I'm already connected with them. So if their current choice of behavior patterns doesn't work with mine, I can just let them go and they can just let me go. If somebody doesn't approve of me, I can just let that go because we're already connected. I don't need to become connected with them. I already am connected with them. And with some people, in order to continue to perceive my connection with them, I need to be physically distant away from them. I can't be around them. And so when we take on that kind of mindset where we're already interconnected with everybody on some level and we should arrange our lives in such a way that we can be around people with whom we can experience the connection that is already there, right? That we can arrange our own lives in a way that we can continue to experience a connection with nature, with the rest of nature, including human beings that are all around us. That is the ultimate act of self-care, right? I'm going to arrange my life in such a way that I can always be in the love mindset, that I can always experience myself for what I am, experience this incredible balance and connection I have with the world. When we decide to live our lives that way, then we don't feel the need to keep up inauthentic relationships. We don't feel the need to be around people who abuse us or to abuse people. And when we do this, then some relationships just start lasting longer, right? Just because we choose to be around each other more, because this person's just being true to who they are and I'm being true to who I am. And we're choosing to be around each other because it's like a game, right? It's a game and we like playing with each other. We're already connected, but something about the choices that we've made and something about the way that we speak and the things that we're interested in, it makes the game fun. And love is not a question, because love is already there. It is already there. We just happen to find it easier to perceive the love that is already flowing between us, seeing how it is that we've turned out. And when we take that kind of viewpoint on relationships, we will only end up being with people that are really good for us, that make us grow, that help us grow, that help us discover who we really are. Obviously, the first step, right, is to say, okay, I'm only going to live the kind of life where I am true to myself and true to what I want. And that's the only way to a relationship like that. And in a huge way, the relationship is just a byproduct. It's just a nice byproduct of that. It's not the origin.
Amen. That's really great. Love that. I see you get yourself on a roll here. Well, this has been really fascinating. I have to say that the program has just flown by for me. I want to thank you for transforming your pain and struggle into help for yourself and for others, and for taking the time and trouble to write and publish your book, The Love Mindset, so that we can open ourselves to changing our thoughts, really, and welcoming thoughts that are affirming and not those that are destructive. So I want to remind you who are listening that Veronica's book is The Love Mindset, An Unconventional Guide to Healing and Happiness, and her website is veronica.org, V-I-R-O-N-I-K-A.org. And Veronica, it's been an absolute pleasure talking with you. Thank you for the work that you do in the world and for the love that you are helping to usher through us.
Well, thank you for helping me share it, and thanks for having me.
Great. It's been a pleasure. Next week, be sure to listen to my fascinating visit with death doula Giselle Suarez. Death is another experience we don't know much about, and we tend to push away and cover over. You've heard Veronica today talk about how important it is when we face how short life is, that it pushes us to really get involved in life. And Giselle and I talk about that a bit also. So she has wisdom about us humans and death, and I hope you'll join me on the recorded show next Thursday, September 11th at 9 a.m. Pacific Time. Paul and Robin Johnston of Fresh Talk Media have been our producers. Thank you both. And for now, I'm Eileen Dillon, your host, reminding you, pay attention not to what you want to overcome, but to what you want to become.
To Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.